The state of Oregon recently put out its count of homeless students in every school district across the state. We should point out it's the latest number, but still from the last school year. And as hard as it may be to imagine going to school and being homeless, it happens to nearly 22,000 kids in Oregon by this count. And that's an improvement of a few hundred over the year before, which was the highest ever. One number jumps out for Southern Oregon, and that is that Medford is second on the list behind Beaverton in raw number of homeless students. With 1,164, Medford has more homeless students than the city of Portland. Let's talk about the need with the number and the need with a couple of organizations that work to help students in need. Fallon Stewart is with the Maslow Project based in Medford. She's the school-based program supervisor. Fallon, thank you for joining us in studio once again.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
And Michelle Glass is with us as well. She's the director of the Rogue Action Center. Michelle, good to have you here.
Good morning, Jeff.
So let's talk about the count statewide. It is somewhat better, but last year was an all-time high. Does anybody take any comfort from where things have gone statewide in the numbers this year, Fallon?
I think one thing to point out is that while numbers are trending slightly down, it's really an insignificant percentage. We are still looking at incredibly high numbers. When you pointed out that Medford is now second behind the Portland metro area, one thing we are hearing is that it's more because families who live in that area are not able to find affordable housing in the Portland city area, so they're forced out to other areas where housing or resources may be more available to them. And here in the Medford area, we definitely still struggle with affordable, available housing for many of the families and students that we work with.
All right, so the focuses of your two groups is a little bit different. Michelle Glass, why don't you sketch out for us what sorts of interest you take in homeless people and homeless students in particular, and what efforts you make?
Yeah, so homelessness for us is part of the larger housing spectrum. And we, as the Rogue Action Center, work across that spectrum from addressing houselessness with Housing First model interventions to addressing the instability in the rental market, which is a huge driver of homelessness among families and students, as well as seniors, people with disabilities, and a lot of working folks in our community. And then we also work on the development side to make sure that we can address some of not just simple supply of housing, but is it affordable? Or is it the right size? Is it accessible? Is it near services and schools? So really, unless the Rogue Action Center believes, unless we get a handle on that full spectrum, we're going to continue to see these numbers rise. And so we do door knocking in renter neighborhoods across Jackson and Josephine counties. And we talk to a lot of these families either right before they lose their housing and become houseless, or just as they're coming into housing after a period of homelessness. And so this is really, from our perspective, very cyclical and connected to larger structural issues in the housing market, and particularly in the rental market.
In the rental market. Okay, we'll come back around and talk about some solutions that you might be working on. But let's cover some bit of what the Maslow Project does for homeless students, because it's a real direct thing that you're doing with homeless students right in the Medford District, right?
Yes, absolutely. And more Jackson and Josephine County. We do serve both counties. So first, I think I'll start by explaining the clientele that we actually work with. The McKinney-Vento Act was developed as in a response to serving a highly vulnerable population. It's actually written into the Constitution first and foremost as a protected class of students. And then the Every Student Succeeds Act did adopt the most recent legislation. And so what that does is it requires that school districts identify who they're houseless students are, and what that
which
looks
is why
like.
this report is here, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's part of the requirement. And so the students are living in situations like they're temporarily staying with others, so their family might be sharing housing with another family, and it's not their own residence, in motels that are weekly rate, high weekly rate, unsustainable, definitely not a long-term solution, in family shelters or youth shelters, and we're seeing a number of increased situations where families and youth are staying in their vehicles, in RVs, in anything that's not fixed to the ground is definitely in that, as well as kids who are camping or their housing is really inadequate. So we're looking at infestations of mold, of rodents or pests, or just structurally unsound and unsafe. And that can be for any student, whether they are with their whole family or on their own. So that's the identified population, and that's K through 12 and even into college. So what we look at is then what are their rights in education, and we help uphold those rights so they can have stability at school. And then the Maslow Project steps in as the social service component, providing advocacy to school and then case management to help with wraparound supports that exist in our community for stability and a resource center to help provide their basic needs.
So it's a range of people from students who are with their families and their families are homeless, or they're living in a car, living in a motel. Is that part of the?
Yes, weekly rate motel. And not because they're waiting on some housing to be built, but because they lack their own actual residence. And it's for economic hardship, financial distress, or some similar reason.
It's a broad range of services then, not just to the students with families, but also to the students who are on their own.
Exactly. Yes, that's very true. And we do have as you can see in the report, thousands across the state who are separate from their family for a variety of reasons.
We're talking about homeless students in the state of Oregon. The report came out recently indicating nearly 22,000 students homeless across the state of Oregon, a slight improvement actually over the all-time high shown last year, but some high numbers on here that I'll get to in a moment. But let me give you the number if you want to join the conversation here on the Jefferson Exchange with Fallon Stewart of the Maslow Project and Michelle Glass from the Rogue Action Center. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to grab a phone and join the conversation, or send your emails with questions and comments to jx@jeffnet.org. And we've been talking about Medford primarily because at 1,164 students, it is actually ahead of the Portland School District. And I should point out there are two school districts in Portland, so it might not be the total city that exceeds Medford. But Medford at number two on the list, and then also in our listening area on the list, Eugene comes up number six with 864 homeless students. Two behind that is Grants Pass School District with 500. And right behind that, the county district in Josephine County, Three Rivers, 477 homeless students. And then in percentages of homeless students, Butte Falls, number two in the state, nearly a quarter of the student body identifies as homeless. Port Orford, Langlois, number five on the list, and Reedsport right behind it at number six with 18.6% of the student body homeless. So it would seem that there's a trend up in the rural areas. Is that a fair assessment there, Fallon Stewart?
Yeah, exactly. That is completely true.
So then what you were talking about, Michelle Glass, some of the programs that you work on at Rogue Action Center and trying to identify with people what their issues and needs are. And you're talking about the development side, too, where you're trying to make sure that housing gets built, not just that it gets built, but also that it's affordable. This is a long-term process, though. I mean, is there anything in the pipeline, so to speak, that would get affordable homes open to people within the next year or two, for example?
Well, there's certainly a lot of focus on the supply side, and it's been a live conversation in local city councils in the last year. And we, through our door knocking program, have been bringing those impacted families, those tenants and renters, to those conversations to actually share with lawmakers what these stories are, what the impact is, and what they need. And we're seeing some important shifts. And so that's encouraging. We also had the passage of Measure 102 on the November ballot in Oregon, and that was a statewide ballot measure that allows cities to now have a little bit more flexibility if they go to voters to raise funds for affordable housing. They can now partner with a nonprofit developer, say, to develop and then hand over management of those affordable housing developments, whereas before in the Oregon Constitution, the city itself as an entity would have had to manage that property, and most cities aren't set up to do that. So we're hoping that as the state legislature and voters start untying the hands of local decision makers, some of those conversations can move forward. But as with all development, we're years out from seeing doors open. And in the meantime, we must increase renter protections if we want to get a handle on the instability in the rental market that's driving families into houselessness.
What kinds of protections?
Right now in Oregon, a lot of people are unaware that any landlord in the state can raise the rent as often as they want and as much as they want. And we're seeing a lot of people being displaced from their communities through unreasonable and repeated rent increases. The other piece to, you know, families being forced into more rural areas, especially when they're trying to keep their kids in the same school district for stability reasons, is that then you have a transportation cost increase. And so the overall impact on the family budget is just astronomical. So between the rent increases and the fact that in Oregon you can evict a family for no reason anytime. Those two factors together are really driving incredible instability in our rental market. And then when you layer onto that, a vacancy rate in the rental market hovering around 1% for Jackson County, you have a recipe for economic hardship and absolute displacement.
I know you're trying to solve the problem and weren't necessarily around when it was created, but from anybody's best guess or anybody's best examination of the circumstances, how did we get to a place where there is so little housing stock that there is a 1% vacancy rate?
Well, it's clear the development trend in the last decade in both Jackson and Josephine County really trends towards above market rate development. And
is this because this is where developers make their money?
It's a rational decision for private developers. And so there really is a role for the community and for local and state government to come in and work with nonprofit developers and make sure that some of the housing that gets developed is affordable, because otherwise, by default, we are going to continue to see only above market rate single family homes for sale get built. And that's not going to ever trickle down and address the issues that we're seeing.
Homelessness with students, the concept and the discussion here on the Jefferson Exchange. Michelle Glass is the director of the Rogue Action Center. Fallon Stewart is the school-based program supervisor at the Maslow Project. Medford shows up as the number two census with homeless students across school districts in the state of Oregon, and there are other high ones, as we mentioned, across the region. You can join us on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And I found myself wondering, Fallon Stewart, that the McKinney-Vento Act makes sure that school districts have some information about their homeless students and how to address concerns for them. Now, is enough information provided back through McKinney-Vento to families about all the things that are available to them through the likes of the Maslow Project?
Yes, thank you for asking that question. Every school district is required to have somebody appointed as their liaison. So in that district, they're not only just identifying who those students are, they're reaching out to those families to help let them know what their rights are as a family who's in transition. And one of those things is that no matter where they end up temporarily residing, the school district is required to work along district lines even and provide transportation to the school of origin. And what that means is the school where the student has been attending and then maybe became houseless or has the most academic history. And so that transportation alone is a big piece of the stability factor. And then if they're coming into a situation where they have to enroll a student and maybe they don't have access to their personal documents, that school has to enroll them immediately and then seek information. And by doing that, it allows a barrier-free enrollment for that student. And then provide, of course, meals without having to go through the rigmarole of, if they qualify, McKinney-Vento status qualifies a student immediately for free meals at school, which, as we know, 60% of our local students are already on free and reduced meals, so it's a poverty issue on top of already being homeless. We know that many of our students face that need at anyway. So
to the transportation option. So are you saying that, for example, if a student had a long academic history in Ashland, for example, mm-hmm. and then ended up homeless a few miles outside of town and near Talent, for example, the district would be providing transportation for them?
Yeah, exactly. They can do a variety of things. Most likely what they would do in that case mm-hmm. is work with maybe Medford District and Ashland and Phoenix Talent to work together with the bus barns to transport that student to and from school in a way that works for them. So they have to be able to get to school on time and not miss any class as a result. And we actively arrange hundreds of these. Even since the beginning of the school year, we've arranged hundreds of these. We can also use city bus, which we do frequently, and we can, in some cases, get really creative and do taxis for temporary use and provide fuel reimbursement to families who have an option of a vehicle. So this is all protected, and school districts can do that.
Let me explore a little bit, too, the issue of homelessness in rural areas, because the districts with the highest percentages of homeless students are indeed, I don't see a single one on here that's in a particular urban area. But, I mean, when we look at, the highest number on the list of top 10 districts with raw numbers is, for the ones I've been looking at here, Three Rivers District, nearly 10% of the student body reports homelessness. But that's not even close to Butte Falls at nearly 25%. Right. What are the dynamics that causes this much student homelessness in rural areas? Do we know?
I think what you're seeing there is where we have multiple families sharing housing, some that are living in places like RVs or camping. And when you look at folks moving into rural areas, it may be a lack of employment options that were once part of that community, industries that no longer exist. They're living where they can or moving out of metropolitan areas where housing is just not affordable. And it could be also part of their improved identification in that district as well.
All right, but they could be living in some quarters that are, they're not affixed to the ground, but they're there every day in the same place. So we're still identifying those as homeless?
Absolutely. Yeah, anything that's not fixed to the ground, so it's not fixed, regular, adequate. It's not meant for long-term dwelling. And oftentimes, wherever you can park, that might be from place to place to place. And if it's not in an actual RV park, which many of these are not, there might be in someone's driveway or next to a house or in a field, they're lacking sanitation. So there's perhaps no active running water or toilet or shower or heat, things of that nature.
It may be a structure, but it's not a home for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Often crowded as well.
Michelle Glass, you were talking about trying to get some results out of the legislature, which does convene next month. Do you feel like the legislature is paying attention, A, and then B, with the release of the governor's proposed budget last week, do you feel like you've got the governor's attention? And is there enough being addressed in what she's proposed for homelessness and for housing in the state of Oregon?
Well, I know that folks that we've been talking to across Jackson and Josephine counties are ready to go to Salem, ready to. We had a meeting with Senator-elect Jeff Golden and about 15 Jackson County renters last Friday, and where they shared their stories and called on him to champion a ban on no-cause evictions and some form of rent stabilization when he goes to Salem. So we will be working actively on calling on the legislature and making sure that those renter voices are part of the conversation. And we know that there's powerful opposition and that there's a lobby group in Oregon that's already raised $2 million to fight any potential increase for renter protections. So my hope is that lawmakers will choose to side with families and act in the long-term best interest of community stability.
But it sounds like, from what I'm hearing from both of you, this is not something that there's no easy solution. If there were, we would have found it by now.
Exactly.
We have to do many things at once, and that takes a lot of community and political will.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today for the discussion about student homelessness. The numbers, again, fairly shocking. 22,000 students, almost 22,000 students homeless across the state of Oregon. The Medford School District alone reporting 1,164 of them. Eugene, 864. Grants Pass, 500. Three Rivers and Josephine County, 477. And then in terms of percentages, Butte Falls, number two on the list at nearly 25% homeless. Port Orford, Langlois, nearly 20%. Reedsport, nearly 19%. We've been talking to Fallon Stewart, who's the school-based program supervisor at the Maslow Project, providing services to homeless students and their families in Jackson and Josephine counties. Michelle Glass, the director at the Rogue Action Center. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Thanks, Jeff.